The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Two Chairs No Waiting, episode number 634, Bernard Fox in Kingsport, Tennessee, 1998. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the folks over at WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Drop by over at Weavers and pick up some of your favorite Mayberry items. That's right, you can pick up the new Mayberry Man print by Gary Varvel. Oh man, it's really cool, and you know, and I'm on it. Go pick that up. I think you'll enjoy it. While you're over there, you might want to pick up some Miracle Salve. That's right, Weavers has Miracle Salve. Go and check it out over at WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of episode number 634 is Mark Copeland. Thank you, Mark, for just supporting the show. And thank you for being here with me as well. It's always fun to be able to talk about the Andy Griffith Show. My goodness, I've been doing it since 2008 here on the podcast and still hadn't run out of things to talk about. So that's kind of amazing to me. It's more amazing to other people than it is to me, I think, but because I can talk about it anytime at a drop of a hat, and I can turn almost any conversation into a Mayberry conversation. That is 100% true. So this episode, we're going to be hearing from Bernard Fox. Now, Bernard Fox, this is the third episode of Two Chairs where I've gone back and looked into what happened in 1998. At I Remember Mayberry that was held in Kingsport, Tennessee. And this one is going to feature Bernard, as I said. Bernard Fox was Malcolm Merriweather on the Andy Griffith Show. And even non-Mayberry fans would know him as Dr. Bombay on Bewitched. Mr. Fox was a wonderful man. I got to sit and listen to him tell stories. And oh my goodness, he knew everybody. Having lived in England, grown, you know, done acting and everything in England. He knew people like Peter Sellers, Peter O'Toole. He just was telling all kinds of amazing stories. So I hope you're going to enjoy this episode as we get to hear him on stage in Kingsport, Tennessee. Now, Mr. Fox was a collector of vaudeville routines. So what you're going to actually hear him doing is his vaudeville routines. At least some that he had collected over the years. Now, again, I want to encourage you to watch the video version of this podcast because you'll be able to see him on stage, see him telling the stories, and I think it adds to the experience. And if you go over to YouTube and watch them, if you just head over to twochairsnowaiting.com, you will be able to watch the video there. But if you watch it on YouTube, make sure you like and subscribe to the YouTube videos as well. It helps more people find it, actually. And my goodness, it's so hard to get people to understand or to know about all the Mayberry stuff that's going on. That's just another little way you might be able to help. So we are heading now back in time to 1998 to hear from Bernard Fox. I know you're going to enjoy this. What an amazing man he is. Here we go. Take it away, Mr. Fox. Oh, and David Browning's
in. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening is so wonderful, and I'm so proud to have an opportunity to be with you and be with these wonderful stars. How many of you remember a fella that somebody said he was probably a part of the Cold Green Guard? Part of the Cold Green Guard on the Andy Griffith Show. He was featured on Bewitched. He was featured on Hogan's Heroes. And it was just recently he received acclaim for his performance in Titanic. And I have enjoyed this day so much talking with him. And you're going to enjoy so much listening to him Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Bernard Fox. I'm going to do a monologue for you. A lot of you know that I collect vaudeville and English musical material. And I have a monologue that I found on the back of an old 78. It was recorded in 1923 by Fred Dupre. And the idea behind it is that you are not allowed to smoke at the side of the stage. And he tried to light his cigar, and the stage manager grabbed him by the scruff of the neck and tried to throw him out of the theater. And I think his act probably began with him coming on stage shouting, something like this.
All right, don't you dare ever lay your hand on an actor again. I'm really no right here at all. But I'm having trouble, you see, the stage managers be rude to me. When I struck a match, you'd have thought I struck him with the way on my collar he flew. Then I struck an idea, and now it strikes me. I ought to see how it strikes you. When once the cigar you have lighted, it spoils it to let it go out. But when I lit up this at the side of the stage manager flew in a terrible rage. Now, I don't know much of theatrical laws, but actors do smoke on the stage, I've seen scores. So the reason that I've come out here is because I don't want my cigar to go out. My friend Bill of Tooting and I went out shooting, and we saw two beautiful birds. Their plumage was pale green and pink. They were both short and tightest, I think. We went for a walk. They both smoked cigarettes. And before we had gone very far, mine said, "Have a fag." I said, "No, I'm grown up." So I lighted myself a cigar. We sat in the shade of a chestnut. And we talked about love and all that. At least that's what Bill did. That's his game with me. I told my girl I liked a nice egg with my tea. Bill cuddled his girl, quite closely they sat. My girl turned to me and said, "Can't you do that?" I said, "Yes, I could do, but well, to be past, I don't want my cigar to come along." Now, me and the wife's mother are fond of each other. Well, we're not, but I say that to rhyme. Now, to talk of one's mother-in-law and of her uncontrollable jaw is a chestnut, I know, but still it's the truth, so I may as well bring it in here. We took the dear soul to Brighton last week, and she fell off the end of the pier. The people rushed hither and thither. In fact, there was nothing but rush. One rushed for a lifebelt, one rushed for a boat. I rushed to conclusions, how long would she float? The wife turned to me, "You're a good swimmer," she said. "Why don't you dive in?" But I just shook my head. "I can't very well at the moment," I said. "I don't want my cigar to go out." Thank you very much. You'll have noticed in that second verse where the girl says, "Have a fag." An English gentleman will always refer to a cigarette as a fag. So if an Englishman tells you he's going to light up a fag, it means he's going to light up a cigarette. It doesn't mean he's going to set fire to a member of the gay community. Actually, there are many, many differences in the common language, and Winston Churchill ran into some trouble. You know, Winston's mother was married, and when Winston got married, they decided to honeymoon in the South, where the relatives were. And of course, the hostess wanted to give it something local, a local dish, so she made southern fried chicken. And Winston enjoyed it very much indeed, so much that he asked if he could have another breast. And there was a shock silence. And then the hostess took him to one side and said, "Mr. Churchill, in this part of the world, we don't say breast and thigh. We say white meat and dark meat." So the next day, he sent her a beautiful corsage with a note which said, "This will look gorgeous pinned on your left white meat." Is where he was coming home from the House of Parliament one night, walking through St. James Park, and he ran into Lady Astor, and he was a little the worse for the booze. And she looked at him and she said, My good man, I would like to point out that you are exceedingly drunk." Churchill replied, "My good woman, I would like to point out that you are exceedingly ugly. But tomorrow morning, I shall be sober." They didn't get on at all. There's a story where they were at a political dinner and they got into a political argument, and she turned around to him and finished up the argument by saying, "You know, if I were your wife, I'd put arsenic in your coffee." And Churchill said, "And if I was your husband, I'd drink it." Another person that he didn't get on with was George Bernard Shaw. At the time, Churchill was the theatrical critic for the London Times, and Shaw sent him a telegram. He said, "I understand from our PR people I should invite you to the first night of my new play. Bring a friend, if you have one." Churchill replied, "I can't make it to your first night, I'll try and make it to your second night, if you have one." It's not generally known, but Winston had a brother, and they hated each other when they were children. One went to Oxford, one went to Cambridge. As they moved upward in life, of course, Sir Winston Churchill became a politician, and ultimately became the First Lord of the Admiralty. The brother went into the church and proceeded up the ranks of the church until he was a prince of the church. And they were both on Euston Station in London one day. So Winston was there, of course, with his admiral's uniform on, all the gold braid and all around here. And the prince of the church was there with his clerical gown on and a purple sash and a little flat hat and a nice little corporation going at this time. And he looked up the platform and he saw Sir Winston Churchill. And he strolled over to him and he said, "Tell me, station master, will the train for Edinburgh leave on time?" Churchill looked at him and said, "It certainly will, but you think you should travel in your condition, madam?" In those days, during the war, you know, of course, the trains were all absolutely packed, and Churchill got onto the train, got into the carriage, and the train starts out of Edinburgh. And there was a GI standing in the corridor, and he'd been standing there for about a half hour, and he looked into the compartment, and he said there was an empty seat, except for a poodle was sitting on it. So he opened the door and he went in and he said, "Ma'am, could we put the poodle on the floor and I could sit down?" And she said, "No, Fifi's seat has been paid for and Fifi is going to stay on her seat." So the GI went back in the corridor and he stood there for another half hour. And then he came in and said, "Now, ma'am, I've been standing out there for an hour. If I put my newspaper on the floor, we can put the poodle." She said, "No, Fifi's seat has been paid for and Fifi's going to remain in her seat." So the GI offered that stuff. He went back in the corridor, and he stood there for about another half hour. And he came in. He said, "Now look, lady, I've been standing in the corridor for an hour and a half. I think if I sit there, I could put the poodle on my knee." And then she said, "No, Fifi's seat has been paid for, and Fifi will remain on her seat." So the GI grabbed Fifi by the scruff of her neck and threw her out the window off the train. Churchill lowered his Times, and he said, "You know, you Americans, you are extraordinary people. You drive on the wrong side of the road. You eat your food with your fork held in the wrong hand. And you've just thrown the wrong bitch off the train." We're going to have a little sing-along now. There are those of you that may remember this song. So I'll sing it very slowly so you can pick up the words and then we'll all sing along. You ready? Sarah, sitting in a shoe shop. All day long she sits and shines, all night long she shines and sits. Sarah, sitting in a shoe shop. She sits and shines and shines and sits. Sits and shines and shines and sits. Sits and shines and shines and sits. Sitting in a shoe shine shop. All together.
So, how many of you want to now try to sing the song that Bernard just did? Sarah, sitting in a shoeshine shop. Oh, I hope you enjoyed that. He was such a pleasure to be around. Great, great man. It's just amazing. Peter Ackerman is in our chat room, and Peter is Miss Ellie's son, Eleanor Donahue's son. He said that Bernard and he were members of the Magic Castle, and that Peter's dad was the executive producer on Bewitched, so he knew Bernard, and that's pretty awesome. So I hope you enjoyed that. Bernard Fox was one of my very favorites to ever get to visit with, because he had so many stories, as I told you before, and he could just pull things out like he did there on stage. What a treasure he was, and I miss him. He was a great guy. All right, so we need to do a little bit of trivia, don't we? It's trivia time. So let's do some trivia. We're going to do true and false questions only. This will be easy. 5 questions. Y'all ready? Trivia time. 5 questions. True or false is the answer. It will be the answer. So let's try this. All right. Number 1, Ramona Wiley's name, her married name was Bectoris. True or false? Ramona Wiley's married name was Bectoris. Oh, true or false? Now, these questions are coming out of Scott Hopkins' book, Mayberry Trivia. You can pick it up at Weaver's. It's a great book. 1,500 trivia questions, by the way. The answer to that question, Ramona Wiley's married name was Bectoris, is true. That is true. Number 2, Colonel Harvey described the Indians he lived among as sinners. Colonel Harvey describes the Indians he lived among as sinners. True or false? True or false? It's one of the two. 50-50 chance. So the answer is Colonel Harvey described the Indians he lived among as sinners. That's false. That's false. He said they're devils. I lived among them. Yeah. All right. Number 3. Let's go back to Ramona. Ramona Wiley thinks Barney is a bartender. Ramona Wiley thinks Barney is a bartender. Ramona Wiley thinks Barney is a bartender. The answer is true. Oh, come off it, Ramona. It's Barney. All right. Next up. Number 4. According to Daphne, Raleigh has a club with a show floor. Or the floor show. According to Daphne, Raleigh has a club with a floor show. True or false? According to Daphne, hello, doll. Raleigh has a club with a floor show. The answer is false. That's not true. It's Yancey. It's Yancey. All right, our final question. Our final question for the for this episode, number five. Barney says the Tip Top Cafe might be serving liquor. Barney says that the Tip Top Cafe might be serving liquor. True or false? 50-50 chance. All right. So the answer is Barney says the Tip Top Cafe might be serving liquor. That's true. That's true. All right. There you go. So that's a true statement. So how did you do? Did you get 50%? Let's see. I guess if you get three, you did good, right? Because that's better than 50-50. So you did good if you got at least three. So I hope you enjoyed that. I always enjoy just playing the little trivia. These are pretty fun for us. And just have a little bit of fun. All right. So now we're going to go over and hear from Randy Turner with This Week in Mayberry History.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Cooper Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
At Mayberry Days, the special guests who attend are most often cast members or children of the cast. But a happy exception is Bruce Bilson, who served as the assistant director for the first two seasons of The Andy Griffith Show from 1960 through 1962. Bruce was born in Brooklyn on May the 19th, 1928. Many Mayberry fans know of his work on The Andy Griffith Show due to his appearances at Mayberry Days, but not as many know he is part of quite the entertainment dynasty. Bruce's father, George Bilson, was born in England and was involved in entertainment in the United States in a number of ways. When Bruce was born, his father was working as a publicist for Warner Brothers in New York. In 1932, Jack Warner asked George to relocate to Hollywood to head up the trailer department for Warner Brothers in Burbank. George did so, and his wife and son soon followed, making Bruce a California resident before he was 4 years old. Bruce's mother, Hattie, initially was not involved in entertainment. A year after the family had relocated to California, a brother to Bruce followed, and another brother after that. So Hattie was kept busy raising Bruce and his two brothers. But once the boys were grown, she began writing. Initially, she wrote for fan magazines, interviewing stars, and then writing profiles of them. Bruce's father eventually switched to the RKO studio and headed up the short subject department. This later led to Bruce's mother writing screenplays for some of the short films. By the time Bruce's father's long career ended, he had been a producer, a writer, and a director. He produced the mid-1950s television series Captain Midnight. Captain Midnight had originally started as a radio show with Alan Soule, Mayberry's own John Masters, playing one of the regular characters, Agent Kelly. One of Captain Midnight's squadron was played by Willis Bushy, who played various characters in Mayberry, including the wealthy cabin owner Charlie O'Malley in Convicts at Large. When Captain Midnight's television version, produced by Bruce Bilson's father, aired, the captain's mechanic, Ichabod Icky Mudd, was played by Sid Melton, who is best remembered as Alf Monroe in Green Acres, but who was Hollywood publicist Pat Michaels, whose insistence on a publicity shoot of Andy and starlet Darlene Mason landed Andy in hot water when Helen saw the photo. Sid played the role in two back-to-back episodes of The Andy Griffith Show. And Captain Midnight's resident scientist in Bilson's television version was played by Olin Soule. Soule was the only actor to perform in both the radio program and the television program. We'll talk about Bruce's career in more detail later, But the term dynasty would not apply if it were only two generations made up of him and his parents. In fact, Bruce has three children, all of whom are also involved in the entertainment industry as the third generation of the Bilson family to do so. His son Danny has written for television and created a number of shows. Among his series is the fondly remembered original 1990 live-action series, The Flash. Danny was also the screenwriter of another fondly remembered comic book property, 1991's The Rocketeer. He has also been involved in the video game business as head of creative affairs for THQ, one of the top three video game producers. Bruce's daughter, Julie, produces commercials and works primarily with director Errol Morris. She produced the lauded documentary The Fog of War and received an Oscar for doing so. When Bruce remarried in 1981, he married Rennie Jarrett, a former child actress who had already appeared in more than 25 television roles before she was eight. She continued to act as an adult before retiring, appearing in series such as The Mod Squad, Barnaby Jones, and Love American Style, and played the lead character Nancy Smith Hudson in the 1970-1971 series Nancy. When Bruce married Rennie, he gained a stepson, Drew Stauffer, who's also involved in the world of entertainment as an editor with Electronic Arts, another video game producer. I think three generations would definitely qualify as a dynasty. But there's a fourth. Bruce's beautiful granddaughter, Rachel Bilson, starred as Summer Roberts on the popular series The O.C. The daughter of Bruce's son, Danny, Rachel has also appeared in series such as That 70s Show, How I Met Your Mother, and Gossip Girl. She starred as Dr. Zoe Hart from 2011 to 2015 in the CW network series Heart of Dixie, and has appeared in films such as New York, I Love You, and Jumper. And if that is not enough, Bruce was there at the very beginning of the Andy Griffith Show, which we'll discuss next week. So that's it for this week. As always, thanks for listening, and remember to take care of yourself, take care of one another, and take Andy's advice, and go out there and act like somebody.
Wow. Thank you, Randy, for that wonderful report. And if you want to make sure you don't miss out on any of the great things that Randy's doing related to the Andy Griffith Show, send him an email at turnersgrade@gmail.com, turnersgrade@gmail.com, and he'll make sure you don't miss out on any of it. So, yeah, Bruce Bilson, the first time, the first time he came to Mayberry Days was the year that Heart of Dixie with his granddaughter was about to premiere on the CW. So he was very proud and was telling everybody about it at Mayberry Days. So it was great. So great. And Bruce is an amazing man too. It's so nice to hear him tell about the Andy Griffith Show and just all the other things. Get Smart. So many things that he was involved in. And it's amazing when you hear his whole family, just all the different aspects. And wow, how thankful we are that he helped get the Andy Griffith Show off to the start it got. So, folks, that is what we have for you tonight. I hope you have enjoyed yourself and enjoyed just visiting here in Mayberry and talking about Mayberry. It is always great to be able to do that. I would love to hear from you. You can give me a call at 888-684-8415 and leave a message. Talk to me. Tell me what you think about the Andy Griffith Show and some of your memories. I'd love to hear that. You can also write me at floyd@imayberry.com. If you can't remember any of that, just head over to twochairsnowaiting.com and all that information is there, and you'll be able to reach out. And just like last week, you'll eventually be in a feedback episode that we do. It is always fun to hear from fans of the Andy Griffith Show and just to share the love of the show with you. So I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, everybody, I hope you have a great Mayberry week, and we'll see you here on Two Chairs. Good night, everybody.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.